The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Most listened to podcast every single week, the UAB director's chair, not only because we have a lot of Blazer Nation out there and people are loving the football season that it's had, the brand new coach in Trent Dilfer, and also the basketball program doing quite well despite the fact they lost again last night. I know they'll make it right before March Madness. They'll get in. We'll be good to go. But because we have Mark Ingram on, the athletic director of the UAB Blazers, a good friend of mine, and you know, while we can get coaches on, and we'll certainly get Trent on and other coaches, I love to pull back the curtain on entire athletic departments, and Mark has been nice enough to do that. First of all, how you doing? The new year treating you right? Everything good?
Yes, sir. Yeah, excellent. Thank you, Tony.
Fantastic. Thanks again for coming on. You know, college football, when I first started doing sports radio 20, 25 years ago, it was so seasonal. You know, September through January, you were done. And then I remember we had a list of things that we could talk about on slow news days. You don't have that in sports radio anymore. And college football is not seasonal. It's year round. That's made it great for everyone who loves college football. So certainly people bring up the idea that Kirby Smart is surpassed Nick Saban is the greatest coach in college football is kind of funny, but it does make some debate. Obviously, Georgia Bulldogs fans are going to have their take on that. Alabama fans are like, we're having none of it. Mark Ingram is an athletic director. What are you seeing from this Georgia Bulldog? My thought is Alabama's been so relevant for so long. It is a dynasty, and you're not going to win every single year, although college football fans believe they should. I think if you're averaging a national championship every other year and a half or 2 years, that's pretty impressive. But your take on what Kirby Smart's doing in Georgia, and the other thing is, you know, Nick Saban was at Toledo, LSU, the Miami Dolphins before he came to Alabama and just turned that that program into a juggernaut. This is Kirby Smart's first coaching job. I mean, what he's doing at Georgia is amazing.
Yeah, hey, listen, Coach Smart is a great coach. He's clearly doing a terrific job there. And hats off to him for a second national title. I think it's a bit hasty to say that he's passing Nick Saban. I don't know how many national, I don't keep up with how many national titles Coach Saban has, but I guess whenever he gets to that number, then you can start having that conversation. And don't forget that Coach Saban won a national title at LSU. So yep. He's won national championships at two different institutions, which I find also very impressive. So, you know, and that's not taking anything away from Coach Smart. I bet he would say the same thing.
Yeah. He's got two, obviously winning back-to-back championships for the first time since Alabama did that in 11 and 12. And Nick Saban obviously has seven, which is the most all time. And I don't think anyone thinks that number is going to be surpassed. Although Kirby at the age of, I think, 46, 47 certainly has a lot of years in front of him. He's 33-1 his last 34 games, top sevens in six consecutive years, back-to-back championships. And he did do something this year that Nick Saban's never done. That is go 15-0. You know, when in the past, and I think the game has changed a lot because I don't think the NCAA has the teeth it used to. Whenever a team was super successful, there were snoops. There were people looking around the program going, how are they pulling this off? How is Kirby Smart pulling off Georgia's success right now?
Well, you know, I worked at the University of Georgia for a couple of years in the early 2000s. And at that time, they had not really made a commitment. And this is surprising to people. They really had not committed to football the way everybody else was. And that, again, like I said, it's surprising to people. But their facility situation was bad, both at the stadium and their practice facility. And, you know, it was hard for me to point that out as a Tennessee graduate without offending somebody. And people don't like somebody coming in from the outside and pointing out the warts, but they were pretty far behind facility-wise and weren't, in my opinion, committed to really at that time getting better. They've changed that. They've changed that mindset. Now they have a practice facility that is what you think they would have if you went to visit. And they're landing recruits. I mean, it all comes down to players. And obviously you got to coach those players, but you can't take a lot of these diamonds in the rough. You may find a few of them that work out, but you got to get a bunch of five stars too that can go play and then out scheme everybody. So I would just say that they've made a greater commitment facility wise, both at the practice facility and the stadium. When I was there, their stadium locker room was just an empty room with folding chairs. That was their stadium locker room. And they thought that was great. Like, they actually were like, oh, this is all you need. I'm like, man, we take a bus from the practice facility like we're in high school. The kids are in full uniform. They walk, they drive them down a mile or so to the stadium. They would get out in their cleats now, walk through a parking lot and do their dog walk, they called it, you know, carrying their pads and walking in their pants and their spikes and everything through the parking lot.
Yeah.
I was like, really? And that, you know, they were good with it. And, hey, you know, whatever you think, but they've changed that and they built this big, beautiful end zone facility with a gorgeous, you know, end zone locker room, again, emblematic of what you think Georgia would be. And you see the success, and now layer that in with sort of the operations program and the coaching, that Coach Smart has implemented led to their success.
It sounds a little like another program that used to have their offices in dentist offices.
Similar.
I remember walking through that facility down at UAB, and I was like, wow, and it's a totally different animal right now. Mark Ingram, the athletic director for the UAB Blazers. Go Blazers, hashtag it, listen to the show. It's one of our most listened to podcasts. You can find it on any major indice, wherever you get your podcast, Tony Curry Radio Podcast Network, and certainly right here on TKR. And thanks to the over 100,000 people who have already downloaded the TKR app. We greatly appreciate it. You know, the word parody has come into play in sports for so long. I'm a Major League Baseball fan. I know your wife is originally from Cincinnati. It was all about how much money could the Yankees spend on winning championships, L.A. And then you get a Kansas City that kind of gets between the cracks. They win championships. The Cincinnati Reds certainly have had their share as well. And now in college football, you know, a couple of years ago, three, 4 years ago, when we distinguished the Power Five away from the Group of Five, was the Group of Five going to end up having their own playoff? Now we're going from four teams to 12 teams. And then you look at what we had in just the championship the last 2 years. Cincinnati gets in last year. You got a 200-1 long shot in TCU, who was picked seventh in their own conference, playing for a national title. How important is parity in college football? Is it important at all? And where do you think it stands right now for people that would be maybe distinguished as little guys like UAB?
Well, I, for the love of the game, and it doesn't matter if we're talking about football or anything else, I think parity is critical. And the NCAA did an excellent job creating parity through the 70s and 80s and early 90s by reducing, in the sport of football, reducing the number of scholarships you could have. And what that did was, instead of, you know, 110 or 140 guys going to one school, those players, you know, numbers 86 to and above, they didn't get scholarships to one place. They went elsewhere. And so that's what created parity. That's how Michigan got beaten by Appalachian State when they were FCS, you know, back whenever it was, 20, 25 years ago. And in my, oddly enough, that was the beginning of the end for parity, because it was great for college football. It was great for everybody in college football, except for the head coach, the AD, and the president at Michigan.
Yeah.
And it was great for everybody else. But since then, by implementing cost of attendance, implementing the new academic awards, NIL legislation, and worse than all of that is by creating this invisible line known as the autonomy group that you call Power Five and Group of Five, those things have reduced, or, you know, slowly not eliminating, but shrinking this concept of parity. And so it's made it harder for these teams in the American and Conference USA and Sun Belt and the Mountain West, it's made it harder for us to compete. Because the differences between us and the upper echelon of the autonomy group, really just the top 20, the differences were already there, and now they're even greater. But I'll tell you, we're closer. If you take the bottom half budget-wise, the bottom half of the Big 12, the bottom half of the ACC, the bottom 20% of the SEC, the bottom half of the Pac-12, the bottom 20% of the Big 10, UAB is closer to those teams budget-wise mm-hmm. than those teams are to their own conference members that are at the top of their conference.
Yeah.
And so it's funny to me that they somehow get anointed as members of the autonomy group just because of history,
sure.
you know, just because it's the way we always did it.
Yeah.
If we will promote autonomy, or sorry, if we'll promote parity, excuse me, if not autonomy, if we promote anti-autonomy and promote parity, you would continue to see UAB, Appalachian State, you know, Louisiana Tech, these teams beating the teams that are in the autonomy group, and you've seen that over and over again. The American does it a lot, which is why when the Big 12 was expanding and people were, you know, giving Mike Oresko, the commissioner of the American, people giving him a hard time of using the term Power Six. Well, when the Big 12 wanted to expand, they took one school that's independent and three out of the American.
Yep.
So make all the fun you like, but that's the fact. And so I like competition. I don't think anybody – look, man, I know if you're an Alabama fan and you get to see Bama in the championship every year, I get it. I would be the same way, same if it was Georgia or Clemson or whoever you are, if you get to see your team in it every year. But for the sake of the sport – it was really, really good to have TCU in that championship. And I realized that the game became, you know, overwhelming and lopsided basically after the first quarter. But them being in it, I thought was really important. And I think that, you know, the Pac-12, if they can get somebody in it again and be competitive, that would be positive. They certainly are capable, you know, it's just yep. a matter of getting in. But the expansion of the playoff is terrific. And that by itself, Tony, there's very few people that wish that there be a group of five playoff. I don't want that.
Yeah.
I want to go compete.
Yep.
I don't want somebody patting me on the head and telling us, well, we're just going to let little old UAB go have its own. You guys go have your own meaningless little playoff. I don't want that.
Yeah.
I want to go be in the college football playoff, and I want to challenge those guys. And we may not win. But I want to get in there and mix it up and see what we can do. And our kids want that.
Well, certainly going to 12 teams is going to give you the opportunity because you know, a lot of people always felt like, hey, listen, if you go undefeated, you're doing everything you're asked to do. You should be rewarded for that. And certainly you'll start seeing that certainly when
yeah,
you're
and if you think
teams.
You're so good and you're going to beat us up, hey, yep. give me a call.
Bring
schedule.
It there you go.
Schedule.
UAB Athletic Director Mark Ingram joins us here for the UAB's Director's Chair. You can hear it wherever you get your podcast every single week right here on Tony Curry Radio. You bring up the budgets. I think it's really interesting because obviously with the new stadium, now you got Trent Dilfer. You've got some amazing things happening at UAB. How do, and I'll use college football as an example because it's probably the most budgeted sport you have, but how do budgets work when it comes to college football? How do you dictate? Is it what you have in the coffers? Do you shoot higher than what you get? Do you look at a return on what you're going to do? Do you look at butts in the seats? How does that work?
Yeah, well, you project what you think the, you know, you look at your historical, you know, season ticket sales and fundraising numbers, and you use that to budget for each year. And if you can grow that each year, you certainly do. And then you allocate it, you know, where your greatest needs are and also where you're going to get a return. We're, you know, we budget very conservatively and with good reason. And we've been fortunate to maintain and be in budget every year that I've been here. The only exception to that is this past year when, because we are moving out of Conference USA and into the American, we did not receive conference revenues from Conference USA. That's part of the buyout, if you will. And so, you know, that's the only time that that's even been a strain. So we've done a great job managing things here. And but you gotta allocate dollars where you can get a return, no doubt. And right now, you know, we don't make a profit in any sport, and that's a real misnomer with whether it's our fans or others. You know, there's not a profit.
Yeah.
We generate revenue, right? We generate revenue, but if it weren't for the university support, we couldn't do what we do. And there's really probably out of 131 Division I FBS schools, I bet there's 20 to 25 maybe that don't receive some funding from their university. So, you know, it's not like we and a few others are the only ones that get money from their university to operate. Most of us, the vast majority, get something from the institution to operate.
Yeah, you usually never pay off a stadium either. And Uber lost $8 billion in 2022, but they're not going anywhere anytime soon. So sometimes when you have thousands of people working for an institution, it's okay to lose money as long as we're providing economic booms for this country. Mark Ingram, the UAB athletic director, joins us here for the UAB director's chair. I wanted to ask you a question. I saw this story and I was kind of surprised. I used to work with, of course, Jay Barker and Al LaGreca, and we would get into hazing. And, you know, Al would tell me the story about as a kicker at Auburn, how his freshman year, he was woke up in the middle of the night. He was blindfolded, stripped, and made to run through the dorm down the hallway while guys hit him with bags of nickels. And it just, and he was laughing about it like it was no big deal. He got, you know, hurt. He had bruises on himself. But it was just part of that, I don't even know what you want to call it. It was something that they just, respected, and something that just happened to every football player that came in the program. Obviously, I don't think that's still happening, but there's a Northwestern investigation right now into a hazing in their football program. And I thought this was such a 70s and 80s thing. I didn't realize that football teams or athletics still did it. I still see stories. You just don't see them like you used to. Can you talk about that a little bit? Is that still something that goes on, and how does it keep happening?
Yeah, it's something that our coaches are more mindful of than let's say when I was a student athlete. You know, I showed up in college, and the first day I got there, all the seniors shaved our heads.
Yeah.
And I didn't think anything of it. It didn't bother me other than I looked like a goofball, you know, and I had to wear a hat around for a month or so while it grew back. But it grew back, right? Yeah. It didn't bother me, but that doesn't mean it didn't bother the guy next to me, right? Some people are more sensitive to that kind of thing, you know, and there's various types of hazing. Like, I would say that that's not really hurting anybody, right? It's not injuring a person. It does create some embarrassment, which is, you know, which is not what you want. But then, you know, you get people that are, you know, they're forcing alcohol on kids or other things that are really, truly, like, harmful to their health. And there's wide varieties of that. And we've tried very hard to eliminate that because you got young people that are doing it, and they will carry it too far, or have in the past carried it too far. You know, but I doubt that we've eliminated it altogether. Right. I'm sure that there are times where somebody, a senior, says to a freshman, "Hey man, carry my helmet out to practice," or something like that. Well, is that, you know, is that hazing? I guess it probably is. Is that hurting anybody? I probably not. Is it the right thing to do to your teammate? No. But you got young people that might do things to other young people that you're just not aware of.
Yeah.
But you try to explain to your older kids, your older students, "Hey, we don't do that here." And there've been programs eliminated over it. Yeah. And in various sports around the country because it was so bad. You know, is it gone 100%? It's not, but we've tried very hard to get it there because, again, there's one thing if it's, you know, something silly like carry my notebook from here, place A to B, and something else that's physically harmful to a person. And that's where the problems are.
I know a lot of guys make the rookies pick up the tab when they go out to dinner. That's one thing. But it seems so tribal as a parent, and I know you are too, to a lovely family. It seems so tribal and such rite of passage, disrespectful to make these players. Jay used to always talk about, you know, you talk about drinking. Jay doesn't drink. And the guys would like just, and he's like, "Listen, I'm not doing it." He stood his ground and ended up winning a national title for it in 1992.
Yeah, I think some people have a strong enough personality that they're able to do it. And yeah, not everybody has the same, you know, sort of courageous ability to do that. My oldest, you know, I've got four kids. My oldest goes to the Naval Academy. The day they show up, they shave their head. Yep. Every student, not the females.
Yep.
But the young ladies have to, you know, they used to have to wear their hair a certain way. They're over the last year or two, they've let them grow their hair longer than they used to. But all the males, their heads are shaved day one.
Yeah.
And is that hazing or not? Well, if you did that here, it would be.
Yeah.
I agree with you. Again, at some places, in certain circumstances, there's a rite of passage. other people don't see it quite that way. I guess maybe looking at the academies, you know that's going to happen. It's not a surprise.
Yeah.
And maybe that's what the difference is. Is it, among other things, you know what you're getting into when you accept that appointment.
We appreciate you listening to the UAB Director's Chair here on TKR on the TKR dedicated app. We do classic rock and roll. We have about 13 or 14 different shows. This is one of them. Of course, you can hear us wherever you get your podcast on the Tony Curry Radio Podcast Network. This is one of our most listened to shows because Blazer Nation gets after it with Mark Ingram, the athletic director for the UAB Blazers and the UAB Director's Chair. I always think it's interesting whenever you go through a coaching change because there's a huge splash, and certainly that was the deal with Trent Dilfer, and then it gets kind of quiet. You certainly have your signing period in December, but it gets kind of quiet, and you just kind of wonder what coach is up to before the next season. You start looking for recruiting news, and you start getting on 24/7 and do all these different things. We know that he made a big hire there with the executive director of football operations and Cole Peterson, which I think was a great get, a youngster that can really get after it. But just talk about what Trent's been up to. I'm assuming since he is such a media savvy guy that he's going to be willing to do a lot of media stuff. He realizes at a school the size of UAB how important that is. But talk about what he's been up to.
Well, it's all recruiting and filling in the staff. There was a early signing period in December that we're most familiar with, but they signed last weekend they were signing transfers through the transfer portal. Which doesn't get as much attention because there's not a, you know, an official signing day. They just sign whenever they sign and start school whenever school starts, and school starts for us on a different day than it does for, you know, Mississippi State, which is a different day than Texas. And so anytime before school starts, if you can get them admitted and get them enrolled in class, then they're officially signed. And now February 1st, the first Wednesday of February, which used to be the signing day, which I wish we would go back to, but that's another topic. This year, first Wednesday of February is February 1, and that is a day where you can sign high school players. Now, you could sign them in December, but you could sign them again, and you could sign junior college players, but those players wouldn't come until the summer. But there's another signing day on February 1, so I would expect that while we did sign some players through the portal last weekend, I think it was 7, and then we'll sign, I'm sure, a couple more February 1. And then for our fans, I hope they'll join us. We're going to do something different this year. We've done it a little bit before. We're calling it 205 Day, as you know, our area code, 205.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And also February the 5th, how clever, at Iron City at 5 o'clock, which is, it's a Sunday evening. Come down to Iron City, meet the staff, meet Coach Dilfer, meet the other coaches, and they're going to introduce all these players. They're going to talk about the unique stories behind how did they land this recruit, where did they come from, tell me a funny story about, you know, when they went into their house and you know, their mom made meatloaf and it was the best meatloaf they ever had, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And had a little brother that teased them about their, you know, their funny shirt, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, you're going to have Ruben Studdard there? You know, he was the big 205 there in American Idol. You should have
Maybe
Ruben.
He could sing a song. That'd be awesome.
he's lost about 205 pounds, by the way.
God bless him.
He's looking swelled. He's looking fantastic. All right, anything else going on in the world of Mark Ingram you want to get into before we catch up next week? Everything else good?
Hey, man, keep supporting our Blazers. Our basketball team has had 3 tough losses, all by one possession. They are really talented. Anybody that's seen them play knows that. Coach Kennedy will get them in the right spot. And the key is to finish strong and get into our conference tournament and then go make some waves there. And so we've got some big games coming up. We got 2 road games before we come back home. So keep supporting those kids and keep coming out.
Hey, no, you're a big classic rock guy. Your thoughts on Jeff Beck? Just when no matter when you're hearing this, of course, he passed away yesterday, but you may be hearing it a couple days later. But your thoughts on the Yardbirds and, of course, Jeff Beck and what he gave to classic rock. I know you're a big classic rock guy.
Yeah, and Jeff was a guitarist and considered one of the best out there, and all the guys that were great guitarists would say that.
Yep.
Whether it was Eric Clapton or Eddie Van Halen, these guys would say, "Well, man, you know," they would talk about Joe Satriani and talk about Steve Vai, and they would talk about Jeff Beck. He was just a really creative guy that gave a lot to the music industry through his creativity and through his you know, just how he was able to, you know, create different sounds that people had not heard before and do things that weren't traditional, right? They were non-traditional in the way that he played, in the songs that he played, and what he created. And so that's it's a loss for the music industry for sure.
There you go. Hey, Mark, thank you so much. We'll catch up next week, brother. Appreciate you.
All right, man. Thank you.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.